Yeah, thank you to the organizer for giving me the opportunity to speak today. So I'm a PhD student at Max Planck Institute with Fabian Schmidt. And today I would like to present some results that came out on the archive at the end of last year, basically. Where using these so-called separate universe simulations that I will introduce later, we were able to measure assembly bias, but crucially in the limit of really large scales, because up to now, most of the results that have been shown were assembly bias measured on intermediate scales, as Simon just said, something like 5 to 20 megaparsec. And using this separate universe simulation, we actually go to much larger scales. So yeah, this is the work that I've been doing with my advisor, Fabian Schmidt, and Marcello Musso, also at MPA. So my content's very simple. I will first introduce the separate universe simulation and how we measure allo bias from them. I don't think I need to go too much into details of introducing assembly bias anymore, since we've already heard about it quite a lot. And then I will show some results for our assembly bias measurements and compare them to previous results. So yeah, let me just put a bit of context. In order to measure assembly bias, or even just the local bias from separate universe simulations, we need to adopt a perturbative approach. And basically, we write the statistic of halos as a bias expansion, as is so-called, where basically we build operators of the matter density field that have to be rotationally invariant. And the simplest operators that we can build are the powers of the density field, and the coefficient multiplying these operators are then the bias coefficient that we call local bias, and which traditionally only depend on mass. But as we will see, we will look at other dependencies as well. And so here I just point out that I use this inclusion sign because, of course, the full bias expansion is much more complicated than that. There are tons of operators that we can build, basically, from the density field. But using those separate universe simulations, we actually measure those ones very precisely. So this is why I'm only pointing out these ones. I should also say that I will use the same definition of assembly bias as Simon, basically. For me, assembly bias is any additional dependence of delta H and the bias, basically, than the mass at fixed mass. Okay, so let me introduce these separate universe simulations. This is my cartoon for it. So these are dark matter-only simulations, where basically the idea is that if we have a long wavelength perturbation here in red, delta M, that in our case we actually take the limit where these wavelengths become infinite, what we want to do is incorporate this perturbation in the background of an n-body simulation. And so basically here what I show is two snapshots of such simulations at redshift zero, where I took an extreme example where I set delta M to be plus one and minus one. And so we can directly see by eye, in this case, the dependence of the clustering on this long wavelength perturbation. So mathematically, this is very simple. The density of matter in the modified simulation, which I depict any quantities in the modified simulation with a tilde, is simply written as the fiducial one times this perturbation that we embed in the background. And this is an idea that has already been quite studied in many papers for the last decade at least, if not longer. Yeah.
Actually, 88 was the first.
Yeah, but that was only the theoretical idea, or was it already run as a simulation? Okay. Yeah, but I mean, this is very simple because once this is done, we can simply compute the mapping, so all the cosmological parameter will be different than the fiducial value, which correspond to delta equals zero. But the mapping actually is pretty simple to compute. And crucially, we use the suite of separate universe simulation that were run by Christian Wagner at MPA a few years ago, where they actually use the full nonlinear mapping between the modified and fiducial cosmology parameters, which allowed us to select large values of delta. When I mean large, of course, we should stay reasonable, like maybe 0.5 in the linear density field or 0.6 maximum. But if we were only doing the linear mapping, we could not go to such high values of delta. And then, yeah, there's only a few choices that one has to make. We actually choose to keep the physical density of matter constant through our simulation set. And also, we match the comoving box size of each simulation regardless of the density perturbation, which allows us to keep the same mass the same mass for each particle, basically. And so, as you can see, this technique allows to really measure the bias or even assembly bias on large scales, because now we are really going to look at the response of the mass function to an infinite wavelength perturbation. Okay, so this is just a quick technical slide to describe our suite of separate universe simulations. You can actually look at this paper, they are described in it. We take a flat lambda CDM universe for our fiducial cosmology, and then we run three sets of simulations with various mass resolution. What I want to point out is that we had to run quite a lot of density contrast values, actually 22 of them. This is because we also wanted to go beyond linear bias, so B2 and B3. And so in order to get the precision necessary, we had to run all these values. And then, of course, we have to identify halos. And so we use the spherical halo finder, AHF, which is described in those two papers. With only one key point is that because in our separate universe simulation, we modified the background density in order to compare apples with apples. We have to rescale our definition for halo, which we take as a region with 200 times the background density with this 1 plus delta M factor. But that was the only technical point. So how do we get the bias parameters? As I said, the local bias parameter for the moment are the response of the halo abundance to a long wavelength density perturbation, in our case infinite. And so it's very simple. We run a suite of separate universe simulation, compute the number of halo at a given mass, and compare it to the fiducial case to obtain this delta H versus delta M relation for each of our 22 values of delta M. And then we directly have the relation that we're looking for. We can fit a polynomial to this and directly obtain our bias factors. And if we only look at a bin in mass, without being in any other quantity for the moment, we get the local bias factor. And doing this in this paper that came out at the end of 2015, we were able to measure B1, B2, and B3 to quite high precision for different redshifts. And we obtained, for example, this relations and best fit that we quote in the paper. But what we want to do now is actually assembly bias. We don't want to do only local bias. And so the technique stays exactly the same, except that now we look at the response of the mass function at fixed M and another halo properties. But we compute exactly the same quantity and look at its dependence versus delta M. And so we actually decided to look at four halo quantities because AHF gives actually the three first one are directly given by AHF without any work. This one we simply had to compute the difference of mass between redshift of 0.5 and redshift 0 to get like the late time mass accretion rate as a finite difference basically. And so as Simon just showed, at least for all these three first quantities, there's plenty of work that has been done in the literature, so we have plenty of work to compare our results with and see if we see any difference when assembly bias is computed on intermediate scales or, like us, on really large scales. And we also wanted to look at other things to try and understand a bit more what's going on. So when we have assembly bias with respect to one property, say the concentration, we also try to reconstruct the bias as a function of shape, for example, using the mean relation between shape and concentration. And as Yao already pointed on Wednesday, this is not expected to work really well. And we also looked at what happens if we bin in two quantities. So now looking at the response of the mass function with respect at fixed mass and with respect to P1 and P2 to see if once I select a particular halo sample with, say, high concentration, the bias with respect to spin will change or not. Okay, so I can finally show you our results. So on the left panel, I show B1. I actually show B1 relative, which is simply the B1 at fixed mass and concentration divided by the local B1 at this same mass. And we have 5 mass bins depicted by different colors. And on the x-axis, you have the concentration. We use the same values I used, for example, in Reza's paper in 2006, where we the CV bar is the mean concentration in the mass bin, whilst this is its dispersion, and CV is the concentration in a given quartile. So we simply divide our concentration distribution at given mass in 4 quartiles. And so we get the usual result if you first look at the solid line here, that less concentrated halos on the left are more biased than more concentrated halos. This is all at fairly high mass, as you can see. We are always above the typical mass for collapse M star. And we see the same mass dependence, that the effect is more important at high mass than at low mass. Interestingly, we were also able to look at the effect in B2, since we have enough precision. And we can see that we find the same trend in B2 as in B1 for every mass. And actually, this is going to be true for every property. And so this result agrees very well with the previous results in the literature. We compared it with the best fit quoted in Wechsler 2006. And the agreement is really quite good. And so this could be a bit surprising, since, as I said, this is on large scales and not on intermediate scales. So one way that we thought this could be explained is because if on intermediate scales there is contamination by nonlinear effects and B2 enters in some way, since the effect goes in the same direction in B2, it would not be of so big importance to measure the bias on intermediate scales and not on truly large scales. And finally, you have these 2 set of curves that are, as I said, the results that you get if you infer bias as a function of concentration using the one as a function of spin or as a function of shape. And so, as you can see, this performs terribly, as I think is already known. The shape doesn't even get at all the right qualitative behavior. So, yeah, I'm going to show you results for all of our 4 properties. So it's always going to be the same 2 plots. Here I show results as a function of the shape, with more spherical halos here on the right, which are more biased, and less spherical halos on the left that are less biased, which is in agreement, at least quantitatively, with previous results. And again, the same effect is seen in B2. And again, reconstructing it, this time using results from the mass accretion rate or from the spin, performs very poorly, as I think is expected. As a function of the spin, again, the same behavior. So as Simon previously showed, halos that have a smaller spin parameter are less biased than halo with a higher spin parameter. And this is also visible in B2. This time, this could be a coincidence, but the reconstruction from the concentration performs pretty well for some reason, whereas the reconstruction using the shape results perform pretty bad. And again, yeah, this is in results in agreement with results that Simon showed before, or that Yao showed as well on Wednesday. And our final quantity is assembly bias with respect to the mass accretion rate at late times. And here, so at high mass, we see almost no mass accretion rate, which is in agreement with the results that Yao presented on Wednesday. At low mass, there seems to be a pretty high signal. But I should say that we didn't take into account these splashbacked halos, basically, so which are really satellites of bigger substructure but are still identified by the halo finder as a main halo. And so these splashback halos have a high bias and a very, probably very negative, thank you, mass accretion rate, which explains why I would actually be careful about those 2 points. I think they are quite contaminated by those halos. Okay, and finally, as I said, we also looked at binning in 2 quantities. So this is just an example. We looked at several pairs, but here I showed a pair spin concentration, basically, on the y and x axis for our smallest and largest mass bin. And so the color coding indicates the amplitude of the relative bias, with red indicating that it's more biased than the local bias, and blue is under the value of the local bias at this mass. And as I said, basically, if you look at fixed spin for this high mass, for example, at fixed spin as a function of concentration, we still see the same decrease at all spin values that was observed. And we've actually checked that for, as I said, several pairs of variables and all our mass bin, and we never see anything surprising, basically. So it seems that specifying an extra property doesn't change assembly bias with respect to another one, at least not dramatically. Okay, so these are my conclusions. So I hope to have convinced you that separate universe simulations are an efficient technique to measure the bias, and really on large scales, which was interesting to compare with previous studies. We found qualitative and even quantitative agreement with all the previous studies. Interestingly, this was also allowed us to measure precisely the effect in B2, which was not done so often in the literature. I also found those two papers. And yeah, as I said, the reconstruction of assembly bias with respect to another property doesn't work very well, and binning in an additional property doesn't change dramatically assembly bias. Thank you.
Just to clarify your last point here, you mean that when you look at two properties, you just multiply the biases of the two properties
to
get
really,
the total?
I really mean, what do you mean, this point or this
yeah,
point?
Yeah, the plots you showed, it looked like you were multiplying the bias due to one property to by the bias due to the other property.
No. I really mean in two properties.
No, I understand that's what you did, but the plot looked as though the result was the bias. In other words, well, maybe let's look at your plot and see if I remember right.
This one.
Yeah,
that one.
So if you read along any column or any row and normalize to the value, it looks as though you get the same marginal distributions on that. That's not correct?
I mean, we didn't check that in detail, but we see no evidence that it shouldn't be the case.
The column here is the bias.
Yeah, exactly.
So you can't really do a marginal distribution.
I'll explain later.
Yeah, we can discuss.
So this is a really beautiful work. I mean,
high bias and low bias from left to right in every row.
Yes.
And every column you go from high bias to low bias from top to bottom. And the two effects go work together as though they're independent of each other.
Yeah. If you condition on one property, they're still secondary bias.
And the secondary bias is the same strength as if you hadn't conditioned on that property.
That's what I mean.
All right. So. You've mentioned our bias and skills, but I think your box size was 500.
Yeah, we have 500 megapixels.
Have you looked at trying to see if you split it up and say 100 megaparsec volumes, whether you can, first of all, what the stochasticity looks like, and secondly, whether at what scale the skill dependence kicks in?
So we have not looked at that yet, but I know that, yeah, Fabian is definitely interested into that, and so with other people at MPA, probably this is going to get done.
So my question is also about the scale dependence. I think it's really cool that basically you're looking at infinite scale. The result is consistent with Simon result and what I have shown, right? But when you're tele expanding the bias, didn't you make an implicit assumption there's no scale dependence?
Yeah. So I only showed the bias measuring the powers of delta. Actually, this B1, yeah, you're right. Normally, it should be B1 plus some factors times K square in Fourier space. But this basically separate universe technique should really enhance the effect of the local bias only, which allows us to basically assume that the scale dependence is of no importance. And so this is why we didn't look at it. But this is something we should check as well.
Benedict here. I just had a quick comment about what you said about the mass accretion rate maybe being sort of negative. You're correct about that. You can actually work out what mass accretion rate in your units a fixed profile corresponds to, and it's about 0.6.
Okay.
So when you measure it that way, anything below 0.6 or 0.7, depending on the concentration, is going to be essentially losing, the actual physical density profile will be decreasing.
Yeah. Interesting. Thank you.
Any more questions or comments about assembly bias?
on the spatial scale. So sorry. So you're measuring this. So how large is large? So you put together all your bias as a function of k, putting k from your k-mean that your box allows to k-max, which is, I don't know, how small.
So if you look at the ratio of the power spectra, as long as you're on scales higher than, I don't know, 100 megaparsec, there should be no more scale dependence.
But in a sense, your modeling, yes, the theoretical model forces you to assume that there's no k dependence. But whenever you measure in the simulations, you can actually go and see whether there is an additional k dependence in your secondary parameters. But maybe it would be nice to see how you're going down to the nonlinear scales.
Yeah.
OK, if there's no more questions, let's thank Titran again. We reconvene back at 11:00.